Have you ever been angry with God? Have you ever felt that that God had let you down? That God had withdrawn a protecting arm from you? I have walked hospital corridors with loved ones who have seen their prayers seemingly go unanswered. I have stood by the caskets of murdered children and heard their parents cry out for understanding. I have sought to comfort women whose husbands have slipped away from them just when their families needed them the most. I have sat vigil with families hoping and praying for good news which never came. Have you ever been angry with God and felt as if God let you down and withdrew His protection from you? A young woman sat in my study not long ago and put questions to me that every one of us has asked in one way or another, at one time or another. Look, if prayer is the answer, she said, why didn't I get answers to my prayers? Why doesn't God speak or at least offer an explanation? Why is God so silent? We sing our hymns of faith where the lines indicate that God is an ever-present help in trouble. But the fact remains that millions have cried out to God in trouble, and the only answer they say they have gotten is a hollow echo. We seek help, but help does not come in the way that we want it to. We seek help to overcome temptation, but the strength to resist temptation doesn't arrive. We beg for the life of a loved one, but the loved one is taken in death. Parents pray for the spiritual safety of their sons and daughters, and then those same children fall into terrible sin, breaking their parents' hearts. Jeremiah of the Old Testament was a great saint, a great believer in God, but he felt that God had let him down. And was wholly indifferent to his cries for help. And he expressed it in an unusual way. He said, or he asked, why, O God, is my pain unceasing, my wound incurable, refusing to be healed? Will you be to me like a deceitful brook, like waters that fail? How can waters fail? Well, you know, the Holy Land is a very dry place. And when the infrequent rains come, they come in torrents, and the muddy waters roll down the stream beds in angry confusion. But then the very next day, when a traveler comes to the brook, lips parched, tongue swollen from thirst, and he spends his last bit of strength to get to the stream, he finds only dry sand. The brook has deceived him. The waters have failed. The water is gone. Not like the water we've gotten in the last few days. How about it? Paul experienced the same thing. This apparent silent treatment on the part of God. He repeatedly asked God to remove the thorn from his flesh, yet it was never removed. And Paul carried that unknown infirmity with him to his grave. Martin Luther was certainly no cynic and a believer in God's goodness and power, but even Martin Luther asked one time, at least one time, my God, art thou dead? And Thomas Carlyle once looked out over the slums in the city of London and said in apparent disgust, God sits in heaven and does nothing. The writer of the 83rd Psalm cried out, O God, do not keep silence. Do not hold your peace. Do not be still, O God, for your enemies are in tumult against me. Have you ever been angry at God? Disturbed at God's silence and at the failure to receive the things that you have asked for? Have you ever been angry at God? The biblical writers have. Why not us? The saints of the ages have railed against heaven. Why not us? The fact is, sisters and brothers, any relationship that is serious and deep and long-lasting is going to have its times of anger and frustration and conflict. If those things don't exist in a relationship, then it's not a serious relationship. It isn't deep. It won't last long. This relationship we seek with God is no different. There are most certainly going to be times of silence, times of anger, frustration, conflict. And the good news is God can take it. Are you ready for that? God can take it. God's shoulders are big enough to carry your anger. And God's heart is strong enough not to be shattered by your frustration. And God's love is resilient enough to absorb the pummeling of your prayers when you are overwhelmed and angry. God can take your anger. It won't scare God away if you are angry, if you are struggling. And so we come to this story of Lazarus and his sisters. It's an intricate story filled with all kinds of details. Jesus, and we didn't read all of it this morning. Jesus learned about Lazarus' illness. Jesus arrived and had conversations first with Martha and then with Mary. Jesus made his way to the tomb and instructed that the tomb be opened. And so on it goes. But in the end, when all is said and done, this story has the potential to do more harm to us than good, because it is inevitable that we ask, sooner or later, in one way or another, a question like this. If God can raise Lazarus from death, then why is there no healing for me and for the one I love? And why no intervention in the circumstance that is ruining my life and my family? And why no remedy for the injustice with which I'm struggling? If God can respond to the cries of Mary and Martha, why not respond to my cries for help? But look a little closer at this story with me. There's an awfully important insight here that we must not miss. Look again at the passage if you still have your finger in the text. Both sisters told Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Now, it's very difficult when you're reading the scripture or reading any book, I suppose. It's very difficult to see and hear the emotion that is in the words. They're just, when we're reading it in a book, it's just words on a page. What's the emotion behind it? Well, it's not hard for me to imagine that there was more than a little bit of anger there. You know, if you'd been here, good friend that you're supposed to be, my brother would not have died. He would have had more hope if he'd seen you. You could have done something. You could have made a difference. If you had been here, if you really cared, my brother would not have died. Can you hear the possibility of anger there? And then John tells us that something they said must have gotten to Jesus. Because in verse 33, John tells us that Jesus was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He didn't get there outside of town when he was talking to Mary, or talking to Martha about the resurrection and life and the power of God. He didn't get there then. But as he moved closer to them, and they got there, they got their anger expressed, and he moved closer to the tomb, Jesus was greatly moved in spirit and greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. And then in verse 35, John takes us deeper and he says, even Jesus began to weep. Jesus began to weep. And the people who were standing around and witnessing this scene said, see how much he loved him. Verse 36. See how much Jesus loved him. And then John doesn't let it go even there. But again, in verse 38, he says, Jesus again greatly disturbed. So he was greatly disturbed to the point that he began to weep, and it continued to get. Jesus' distress continued to deepen. Again greatly disturbed, he went to the tomb. And then asked that the stone be removed, he prayed and called Lazarus out. When we consider this story of the raising of Lazarus, we tend to see it as a story about God's power, the power of life, the power of resurrection, the powerful triumph of good over evil, life over death. And we see the power of God in it, and we want that power for ourselves, exercised on our behalf, intervening in our lives, bringing healing and hope and life and justice and mercy and compassion for us and for those whom we love. And our prayers are prayers for this power of God in our world and in our lives and in our families. But this is not a story about God's power. That's not what it is. And that's not what it's about. It's not about God's power, the power of life, the power of resurrection, the power of the triumph of good over evil and life over death. Lazarus' story is a story about God's love, not God's power. God's love. See how he loved him. The crowd who surrounded Jesus that day, all the people who were watching and experienced it with him, didn't say, "Oh my gosh, here he comes, look out. Lightning's going to fall from heaven. Something magical's going to happen here. Something incredible, something we don't expect." No. They said, see how he loved him. And the crowd recognized and remarked, "See how he loved him." This is a story of God's love, more than it's a story of God's power. And this story, I think, seeks to instruct us. So long as we seek God's power, we will be disappointed. So long as we seek God's power, we will misunderstand. So long as we are motivated by God's power and gaining that power for ourselves, we will fall short. But if in our prayer and in our living we seek God's love, to experience it, to receive it, to trust God's love and to pass it on to others, we will experience the resurrection and the life that God sends among us when we seek God's love. We struggle all the time. I hear you day by day in our conversations and the way we talk and the things we say to each other. We struggle all the time to understand God's power. And we always fall short. We just can't make it add up. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why aren't my prayers for God's intervention answered when it seems to me that those prayers are answered for others? Why do folks who ignore God and God's values seem to prosper while those who faithfully serve God through long years suffer? We don't know a great deal about God's power. And how God exercises his power in creation and beyond. We struggle with the whys and the hows of God's working among us. But we do understand God's love. We know it best and we know it through and through because we are connected to God through Christ. And in it is love that binds us together. We will always be frustrated when we are seeking to know and to grasp God's power and to channel it for our own benefit. But when we grasp God's love, when we seek God's love, we will never be disappointed. And so in prayer, sisters and brothers, we would be well advised to seek God's love rather than to yearn for God's power. For God's power and the understanding of it eludes us. But the love of God is always available and promises to carry us. Light and life, hope, mercy, love and peace, faith and joy, life's most important components. Seek God's love more than you seek God's power. I love the story that George Matheson told about how he wrote a marvelous hymn, which we will sing in a few moments. It was the 6th of June, 1882, and Dr. Matheson was home alone in the evening. And he said this, "It was the day of my sister's marriage, and the rest of the family were staying overnight in Glasgow for the celebration. Something happened to me, which was known only to myself, and which caused me the most severe mental suffering. This hymn was the fruit of that suffering. It was the quickest bit of work I ever did in my life. I had the impression rather of having it dictated to me by some inward voice than of working it out myself. I am quite sure that the whole work was completed in 5 minutes, and equally sure that it never received at my hands any retouching or any correction. It's a hymn that we don't sing too often, but it is profound in its insight. O love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe. This verse, this hymn, is a surrendering of the artist's pursuit of power. And it is a yielding to God's relentless love. O love that will not let me go, I rest my weary, striving after power soul in you. O love that seeketh me through pain, I cannot close my heart to thee. I trace the rainbow through the rain, he says. But it is the last stanza that really captures my imagination. O cross that liftest up my head, I dare not ask to fly from thee. In other words, I do not seek God's power to make my life free from pain and discomfort and inconvenience. I lay in dust life's glory dead. I lay in dust life's power dead. And from the ground there blossoms red life that shall endless be, because it is God's love that will not let me go. So I invite you, sisters and brothers, to seek God in prayer these days. But be careful by your prayers that you do not cloud your view of God and distance yourself from God, because you are seeking God's power to provide you with comfort and wealth in the moment. In prayer, seek God's love, the love that will not let you go, no matter what life circumstances are, the love that will not let you go.